For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It's April 7th, and we are beginning Parashas Baaloscha on page 774. This will be our last class before we break for Pesach. Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lemar, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber el Aharon v'amarto elav, speak to Aaron and say to him, Behaaloscha esaneros, when you bring up the candles, which means to light them, but the language is to bring them up. What do they say to
when
here?
You kindle the lights.
Yeah, it doesn't, it literally, as you see, the word al is in there, on. It means to bring up. That's the literal translation of the candles. El mul pnei ha-menorah, towards the middle of the menorah, to the face of the menorah, towards the middle of the menorah. Ya'iru shiva saneros, the seven candles should light. Now this means that you should angle the candles, the wicks, towards the middle of the menorah. There was the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was a seven armed menorah, seven candle menorah, not an eight candle menorah like on Hanukkah, but a seven candle menorah, and you have the middle one, and then it's flanked by three on either side. So the candles would lean in towards the middle one. Vayas kein Aaron, Aaron did so. El mul pnei ha-menorah ha'ela nerosea, towards the middle, the face of the menorah, he brought up its candles, its lights. Kasher tziva Hashem as Moshe, as Hashem had commanded Moshe. V'zeh ma'aseh ha-menorah, and this is the making of the menorah, what it looked like. Miksha zahav, it was miksha gold. Miksha means of one piece. They weren't different pieces put together, but rather one solid piece that was shaped into a menorah. Ad yirecha, ad pircha, until its supporting piece. You know what it means over there? Its base, right? Until its flower, mikshahi, it was miksha, which means even every little detail was miksha. Every single part of it was miksha. Even the parts of it that seemed to be only decorative, like the flowers, even they were miksha, which means it was all from one solid piece. Kamarea sheher Hashem es Moshe, like the vision that Hashem showed Moshe, kenasa samanora, so he made the menorah. The menorah was a particularly difficult utensil for Moshe Rabbeinu to make. And he did not know how to do it. It was so complicated. And so Hashem showed him a vision of what it was to be made of, and what it was to look like. Now, we learn from the word Beha'aloscha, which is what the parasha is named for, to bring up, two different things. We learn, first of all, that he is to light the candles until there is a flame coming up. In other words, sometimes when you light a candle, you can put fire to the wick and then remove the fire. The wick has caught. It's very, 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 very subtle, very small, a little bit. You can barely see it, but it's already hot enough that when you move away the candle, when you move away what you're lighting with, it'll eventually flare up. But here he had to continuously light it until it flared up. That he should continue lighting until it actually became a flame. That's one thing. And two is that we learn from here that there should be ma'alos. Ma'alos are steps in front of the menorah. That Aaron should stand on steps when lighting the menorah, whether he needed them or not. The menorah was 18 tefachim tall. 18 tefachim is 3 amos. An ama is always a debate exactly how big an amma is. If Moshe Feinstein says it's 21 and 3/4 inches. So call it 21 inches, call it 22 inches. So it was 3 amos tall. So you're talking
like a yardstick.
Like, well, 3.
Oh, so 3 21s.
It was a little more than
two yardsticks.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. So it wasn't 6 feet. It was a little less than 6 feet. Because it was, right, so 5.5 feet or so. So an average, a man of average height could reach the lights, even if they was slightly, maybe the menorah was slightly taller than his head, but it's fairly easy to light. Nevertheless, it was required that Aaron go up on steps to light the menorah, to stand on steps to light the menorah. Now, and then it says that when he lights the menorah, so he should light it in a way that the wicks face they're pointed towards the face of the menorah, they're facing the middle of the menorah. And it says that Aaron did so. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Aaron did so. So he followed instructions, and he lit the menorah so that the wicks faced towards the middle of the menorah. So that point seems to be somewhat redundant. Not redundant, but somewhat obvious. I mean, why would Aaron not have done as he was told? I mean, he was told to light it, so he lit it. But the Torah makes a point to make it clear what he did, which is exactly what he was told, which is to have the lights face the middle of the menorah, which means that there would have been some motivation for Aaron not to do it. It's that the Torah is to tell us what he was commanded to do. That's necessary, because if it had not told us, we wouldn't know it. We would know that the lights were supposed to face the middle of the menorah. But that it's then it says that Aaron did so. What did he do? He followed instructions and made sure that the lights faced the middle of the menorah. It sounds like there was some sort of an incentive for Aaron not to follow instructions, and the Torah is telling us, yes, he did follow instructions, and he is praised for doing so.
So if the menorah is made each part straight up, or it's built that it's at an angle?
It's made straight up.
So that would be hard to make it.
Well, you have to angle the wicks.
Yeah, we know how hard it is to get our wicks to do what they're supposed to do on Hanukkah. To get that, I mean, I would say, and so he did, that he did so is because it's probably difficult to get them.
Okay, good. So you think it's not such an easy thing to do. Okay, that's a possibility. Now, why does it have to be that the wicks face the middle of the menorah? They translate it as toward the face of the menorah shall the seven lamps cast light. So what's the reason for this, that they all angle in towards the middle? So the reason is because otherwise it would appear like the menorah was there to give light, and the menorah was not there to give light. Remember that the Mishkan had no windows. So when you went into the Mishkan, it should have been very dark inside. There were no windows. There was only one doorway in to the Mishkan, and that doorway had a curtain over it. So it should have been fairly dark inside the Mishkan. And yet, it wasn't. It was light. That was whether the menorah was lit or not. It was light. The menorah was not there to give light. The menorah was there to follow the instructions of Hashem to light a menorah. But it wasn't the purpose of the menorah. It was not for light. And that's why the candles were angled towards the middle. Because if your purpose is to give light, you wouldn't angle the lights towards each other, which seems to waste the light. Rather, you would angle the lights away from each other to get the maximum effect of all that light. So this projected the message that the menorah was not there for light, which it wasn't. So Aaron did so, and he lit the menorah in that manner that projected the message that there was no need for light from this menorah. That wasn't the purpose of the menorah. Rather, it was to follow the instructions of Hashem to light a menorah. So, if the purpose is not to give light, and it's rather to follow the instructions of Hashem, then what's the purpose that Hashem wants us to light the menorah? Now, you could just say, because Hashem said so, which is true of all mitzvahs. All mitzvahs, that's the basic answer. We do it because Hashem said to do it. It's not necessarily a reason that we understand, unless the Torah gives you the reason. We don't always know the reason. But do we have any deeper understanding into why Hashem has Aaron, and subsequently the Kohanim following him, light the menorah? There's a requirement that the menorah be lit every night from evening until morning, that it be lit. So what if it's not to give off light, what's the purpose of the menorah? What is the menorah symbolizing? What is it projecting to us if it is not to give off light? Especially since most people wouldn't have seen the menorah being lit because it was inside the Mishkan. Inside means inside the curtain, a place where only Kohanim could go. Levim and Yisraelim could not go. So it would be rare that anybody would get a glimpse of the lit menorah. So what is the menorah projecting? What is it teaching? What lessons are we learning from the menorah with the lights if it's not there to give light?
Well, Torah is a light. Torah is a light Torah. And if the light is always there, you realize it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
No, but if the light is always...
If you said there was light in the Mishkan, you didn't have to depend on the menorah for the light. Then you source everything in life, the source of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Okay. All right. So it's true that the menorah symbolizes Torah. That is what it symbolizes. We've talked about this before when we learned Parshios Truma and Vayakha. We talked about how the menorah symbolizes Torah, which is true. And the menorah is in the south of the Mishkan, and that's why, if you recall, we said, Harotza lahachkim yadrim, a person who wants to access wisdom, wisdom of Torah, then when they daven Shmona Esrei, they should angle themselves slightly to the south. We faced east, but to turn their head slightly southeast when they are davening is a way of accessing this chachma, the wisdom of the menorah, because the menorah was in the south. So the menorah represents the wisdom of the Torah, which is true. So the light of the menorah is not light for physical light in order to see physically. Rather, it symbolizes, as we know from the Megillah, Ora Zu Torah. And when it says, La Yehudim Haisa Ora V'Simcha V'Sasam V'Kar, the Jews had light, and they had joy, etc. So the Gemara lists what each of those words represents. And when it says Ora, they had light, the Gemara says Zu Torah. That's referring to Torah. So the menorah represents the light of Torah, and the lighting of the menorah is projecting to us the light of Torah. That's what it's meant to project. But the menorah is lit only at night. It's not lit during the day. The mitzvah is to light it at night, and it burns through the night until the morning. Now, it's true that there was a miracle that took place, that the Ner Ma'aravi, the one of the lights, remained lit throughout the entire day, even though there was only enough oil to last through the night. But on a daily basis, this is the miracle of the Hanukkah miracle, where the lights burned for 8 days with only enough oil for one day. There was a daily miracle like that, not all the time, it's only when we deserved it, but there was a regular miracle of the menorah that one of the lights would remain lit throughout the entire day, even though there was only enough oil for just the night. So it's true that at least one of the candles did burn the entire day, but that the mitzvah is only to burn the candles at night. So if the Torah, if the menorah represents Torah, it's not there to give light, but rather it's there to represent the light of Torah. Wouldn't we expect that it be lit 24 hours, just as Torah is a constant? It's not something which we're supposed to only do at a certain time, but rather it's all the time. We know that there always needs to be people studying Torah for the world to survive. So why would the mitzvah of lighting the menorah only be at night?
That's when people are sleeping.
Okay, and therefore?
Support. The Torah we're learning is during the day, and the light of Torah is still going throughout the night while we're sleeping.
Okay, so the light of the Torah that's generated from the study of Torah, the light that's generated from the study of Torah, continues even when people are not doing it into the night. Okay, that's a nice explanation. Good. The Gemara does say that when a person studies Torah, then the Torah protects a person from the Yetzer Hara, protects a person from the evil inclination, helps a person be able to follow the Torah, follow mitzvot, and follow Hashem, and not follow their evil inclination. The Gemara says this shmira, this protection, is afforded even when the person is not studying. Meaning, if they study, then that protection can carry over to a time where they're not studying, as long as the reason why they're not studying is a good reason, right? If they're not studying because they just decided not to study when they're really supposed to be, well, then they're throwing off the yoke of Torah. So there is a. It is true that we do find that Torah does provide something that that when a per, when the, if when a person is not able to do so, but the study of Torah that they do when they are able to do so helps them when they're not able to. So it could be that that is the symbolism of the menorah being lit at night. What does night represent in the broader sense versus day?
Danger.
Danger, galus. So it represents galus. It represents the exile. We say in Barchi Nafshi, which is the chapter of Tehillim that we read on Rosh Chodesh. So it was read yesterday in Shul. So it says that, referring to the nighttime, it says, Bo sirmos kol chai soyar, that in the at night, that's when the beasts of the forest, that's when they roam. Bo sirmos kol chai soyar. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says that is referring to not just the physical beasts, but it's, in a broader sense, it's referring to the nighttime being a dangerous time. That it is a time of danger, time of fears, time of whatever forces are out there, that the nighttime is susceptible to danger. And therefore, galus, exile, is represented with nighttime. So the menorah being lit specifically at night is symbolic of the fact that the Torah is the thing that takes us through those dangerous times. The in galus, in exile, by definition, when we are in exile, like now, we neither have a king, nor do we have a Beis HaMikdash. So we don't have a functioning royalty, we don't have a functioning Beis HaMikdash. We still have Kohanim, but we don't have a functioning Kohen class, because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash for them to function in. The only one of the three facets of our strength that still functions regularly when we are in galus, it functions, as you say, at an optimum level when we're in galus, is the study of Torah. It's true we have things that replace the other ones. For example, we have davening that replaces the service in the Beis HaMikdash. We have chesed that represents, malchus represents royalty, but still we don't have the actual royalty, we don't have the actual Beis HaMikdash. But the study of Torah is a constant, and we have that in galus, we have it in exile as well. And so it is the study of Torah that carries us through the exile, it carries us through the galus. And we have it today, Baruch Hashem, that's what carries us through. So the lighting of the menorahs, particularly at night, projects to us that the study of Torah at a time when otherwise we don't have any other means of protection affords us protection at nighttime. And so the menorah is lit particularly at night. At night is the time that one could be tempted into thinking that the menorah is to give physical light. And after all, it does cast light. And it is dark. And so it dispels the darkness and allows us to see. So when one is lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, it could be tempting to light it for the purpose of light, or to think that perhaps it is giving light. Now, what's wrong with thinking that it's giving light? There was light anyway. So what would be the mistake over there? Where did the light come from in the Mishkan, if not from the menorah? Where is the light coming from anyway?
Well, the altar has...
So the altar had a constant fire, but that was the outside altar.
The outside.
Right. So where is the light coming from, if not from the menorah? So the answer is that there is a supernatural light that Hashem is putting into the Mishkan on a regular basis that's allowing the Kohanim to see in the Mishkan. So when lighting the menorah, if one would think that the menorah is the object giving light, then one is taking away from the fact that it is Hashem who is providing the light and thinking that it's me that's providing the light. I'm the one, I'm lighting fire, I'm lighting candles, I'm lighting a menorah, and that's what's providing the light. So by angling the wicks towards the middle of the menorah, then what is being projected is that it is not me, it is Hashem that is doing so. The study of Torah, likewise, it is affording protection for us throughout Golus. But here too, one could make the mistake into thinking that we are the ones affording our own protection, whether physically or whether through the study of Torah, but we're the ones who are doing it. And again, what is being projected over here that it is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our own lighting the menorah in a way that the light was directed towards the middle of the menorah, making it clear that the light does not come from us or from what we do, but rather from Hashem. So he was projecting this message that it all comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It does not come from us. We do what Hashem tells us to do, but it is Hashem who's providing all the protection throughout the Golus. Now, this concept is very relevant to Pesach, because we know that Pesach night, the 15th of Nisan, is called Leil Shimurim. It's a night of, really literally means watching or anticipation, but it also means protection. It's a night, it says, the Gemara says, it's Shamur Uba Min HaMazikin, that it is a night that is protected from the Mazikin. What are Mazikin? Mazikin are these forces that roam at night. Even though these supernatural forces we don't encounter today, but we do know that the night is more susceptible to danger. And the night of the 15th of Nisan, the night of Pesach, is protected from those forces. In other words, the night of Pesach is not treated as if it is a nighttime. It is a Leil Shehu Yom. It is a night that is treated as if it is a daytime. As we've explained before, that when it says that the night of Pesach is a night that is protected, it doesn't mean that nothing bad, Chas V'Shalom, could ever happen on Pesach. Of course, bad things could happen. But what it means is nothing will happen on the night of Pesach, at least nothing will happen to God-fearing Jews on the night of Pesach, that would not have happened had it been the daytime. Meaning, nothing's going to happen because it's the nighttime. There are plenty of things that happen other nights of the year because it's nighttime. Nighttime is the time when evil people who want to do things in a way that they don't get seen, they do it at night. Burglars operate at night. People do things at night when they want to do things that they don't want other people to see. And there are creatures that roam at night that don't come out during the day. They're scared, but during the night they feel safe and they come out. So the night of Pesach is a night when we treat it as if it is a daytime. That it is not a nighttime, it is a daytime. It is a Leil Shimurim, a night of protection, as if it were daytime. So this has some very specific halachic applications. The most basic application, which we're all familiar with, but perhaps don't know why we do it, is the opening of the door, generally the way they say it is, you open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi, for Shvach Hamascha, so we open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi. So we're not really opening the door for Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi is not in his physical form when he visits us at the Seder, even though we know that he does come, but he's not coming in a physical form. He's coming in an angelic form that doesn't require a physical body, and therefore he does not need the door open in order to get into the house. So opening the door is not, we're not opening it for Eliyahu HaNavi, we're opening the door to show that we feel safe, that it is a night of Shimurim, a night of protection. And in so doing, by showing that emuna in Hashem, that we trust that tonight, even though it looks like it's dark outside, it looks like it's nighttime, but we trust in Hashem that it is actually conceptually a daytime, not a nighttime. That's when we open the door. In that merit, then Eliyahu HaNavi should come and herald Mashiach and announce that Mashiach is on his way. And we know that Benisan Nigalu, Benisan Asidan Lihigael, we were redeemed in Nisan, and therefore in Nisan we will be redeemed again. So we open the door at the Seder to show that we trust what the Torah says, that this night is a night of protection, and therefore safe, and we can open the door. It is no different than it would be daytime. Just like if it was during the day, we'd have no problem opening the front door. So even though it's nighttime, we open the front door. And that shows our emunah in Hashem, and in that merit, then Mashiach will come. That's one application. A less known application of this halacha is that it's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch that a person should not lock their door the night of Pesach when they go to sleep. Then when they go to sleep at night, they leave their door unlocked. So that's also to show that we trust that it is a time of protection. Now, what does that mean, we leave the door unlocked? So again, what it means is a person should treat the night of Pesach as if it were the daytime, not nighttime. Now, most people have a different standard for how much they lock their door at night and during the day. Meaning, even those who do lock their door during the day, many people lock their door, some people don't. Some people don't lock their door during the day, they only lock their door at night. Other people lock their door both night and day, but at nighttime, they put on an extra bolt, an extra chain, they put the alarm on, they do something extra because it's the nighttime, they're going to sleep. So it's nighttime is more dangerous, everybody in the house is going to be asleep, so they add an extra layer of protection before they go to sleep. So what we're told to do is, don't do that. Don't add that extra layer of protection. Lock the door only as you would if you were taking a nap in the middle of the day, rather than going to sleep at night. And for most people, that would mean one layer less than what they normally do, and leave the door that way. That's showing our trust that it is not nighttime. It's, even though it's dark outside, it physically looks very dark, the sun doesn't seem to be up, but conceptually, it's daytime. We look at it as if it is a daytime. And therefore, we leave the door less locked than we would if it were a true nighttime. We know that part of the emunah we're supposed to have in the chachamim, in our sages, it says that we're not supposed to deviate from what the sages tell us, neither right nor left. So Chazal tell us this means if they tell you right is left or left is right, you have to listen. If they tell you night is day and day is night, you have to listen. So if you listen to the sages, even if they tell you that Laila is Yom and Yom is Laila. So you say, what do you mean? It looks like nighttime, I'm looking outside, everything looks dark. But the sages say, no, it's daytime, we're supposed to listen. You look outside, it's daytime, it's the sun is up. They say, it's nighttime, we're supposed to listen. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that they're somehow telling us that our eyes are tricking us. It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that they're saying that the sun is really not here. Well, clearly the sun is up, but what they're saying is, conceptually, we treat it as a night when it's day, or day when it's night. And so Chazal are explaining the pasuk of Leil Shimurim, they're telling us we treat it like it is a daytime, even though it is physically nighttime. That the mazikin, those forces that normally roam at night, do not roam on the night of Pesach, on the 15th of Nisan. Theoretically, another application of this would be that the rules that one would have for walking outside on the night of Pesach, one would apply their daytime rules rather than their nighttime rules. So it's however I normally feel safe walking around during the day, that would be the way to apply walking around outside at night on the night of Pesach. So those are various applications of this particular halacha. So in the Mishkan, the fact that we're lighting the menorah at night, what we're saying is that the Torah is affording protection. We don't need the physical light. We don't need to actually have a candle to make light. We don't need a flashlight. We don't need lights we don't need the various those are being provided by Hashem. And the menorah, which represents Torah, is dispelling the darkness of Golus with the power of the Torah. And to to trust that that is the case. It is difficult often to feel safe in Golos, and sometimes we're not supposed to feel safe in Golos. Sometimes it's not a safe time. But what we are supposed to believe is that whatever protection there is in Golos is provided by the study of Torah. And even though the study of Torah may not appear to afford protection, we don't see in someone studying Torah, we don't see a soldier carrying weapons fending off attackers. We don't see in the person studying Torah a wall or an alarm or whatever it is. We don't see the protection, but the truth is that the study of the Torah is in fact protecting us, and it is something that it should be the refrain that we use, meaning that regularly, it should be the way that we think about the study of Torah. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nivra. What I mean to say is like this: sometimes at Shalosh Shunis here in the Kollel. So sometimes when it's a when it's either a weekend that Or Yisrael, that the yeshiva has a weekend off, or at a time when it's over Yontif, so the Bachurim are home, or sometimes the Yungalite from out of town are home, so they'll be at the Shalosh Shunis, which means we have more people than we normally do. So what I always tell them is that we appreciate their being with us. It's always a chizuk. It always strengthens us to see those who are devoting their time to learning the way they are, and that when their vacation is over and they go back to the study of Torah, they should do so b'hasmada. They should do so with diligence and with strength and concentration, and continue to provide the protection that we derive from their study of Torah. Their study of Torah is protecting us in all of our endeavors. And we should look at it that way. We should think about it that way. We should talk about it that way. That the intense and devoted study of Torah is providing a certain measure of protection that we would not have otherwise. That's true when it goes on locally, in the yeshiva. That's true when it goes on in Eretz Yisrael. That the study of Torah is providing for all of Klal Yisrael a very powerful protection. And that's the way we should think about it. That is the concept on Seder night. There's a protection that's there, even though one doesn't see it, but it is there. And so too with the menorah and the Mishkan, there is a protection from the study of the Torah that is represented by the menorah. Now yes.
On Hanukkah, we're not allowed to use the menorah for light. Does it come from this?
It's a very good question. Hanukkah light is different, even though it's representing the lighting of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. However, why does it have eight candles instead of seven? Because it represents the different nights.
Right.
So the purpose of the lighting of the menorah on Hanukkah is for Pirsumei Nisa. It's to publicize the miracle of the lights. And we're not allowed to use it for that reason, because if we would use it, it would look like it was there just to provide light. Especially in an age when you don't have electric lights, so it's just another chandelier. So this is to show that no, that's not why it's here. It's here to publicize the miracle.
And the second is, did Hashem ever not have the supernatural light, like if we were not
It doesn't seem to be, it's not spoken about that often. It seems like that was just a regular thing that they could see in the Mishkan, even though it should not have been that way, but they could see in the Mishkan. It doesn't talk about it. Now, in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, when it lists the constant miracles that took place in the Beis HaMikdash, does not mention this, but the Beis HaMikdash did have windows. there were windows in the Beis HaMikdash. Now there as well, the windows of the Beis, as opposed to the Mishkan, Mishkan had no windows. But the windows of the Beis HaMikdash were also fashioned in a manner that were in order to project that the windows were not the source of the light. You remember that from Rachem? Yeah, they were angled in rather than angled out. They were angled in where normally they'd be angled the other way in order to provide the most light. They were angled the wrong way. It was a thick wall, and they were angled the wrong way, which seemed to show that that they didn't need the light. It wasn't angled in a way that would have optimized the light from those windows. So, but for the Mishkan, it doesn't really talk about it that I know of. Anyway.
They had good night vision.
Okay. Now, the very end over here, the very end of the paragraph says that the menorah, it emphasizes the menorah was miksha, that it was of one solid piece. Even the most delicate parts of the menorah were all of one solid piece. Again, we spoke about miksha when we learned about the menorah before, and the one solid piece is also symbolic of how strong the menorah is. As we all know, when you take different pieces and you solder them together or stitch them together or whatever it is, they more easily can be torn apart or broken apart. When you have a solid piece that was never two separate pieces, so then it's harder for it to break. It makes it a more solid and a more rigid whole. But we also pointed out that at the time, that it also makes it much more difficult to construct. Making something miksha is much harder to do than making something in separate pieces and then putting them together. So we explained at the time, and we're actually going to have another example of this in Parshas Bahaloscha later on, but we explained at the time that the menorah was something which, on the one hand, was very difficult to make. There were no shortcuts. You had to do it with one solid piece of gold, very hard to do, but at the same time, the finished product was a very sturdy, strong finished product, and it would not easily break. This represents also the study of Torah, in which there really are no shortcuts, that one cannot somehow study the notes and then somehow become an expert. The only way is to do a good job and really study it well over a period of a long period of time and many hours and much diligence in order to become an expert in Torah. It is a more difficult study, but the finished product is very powerful and very strong and does not break very easily. That's what miksha represents, as we mentioned before. Now this was about Aaron. This was Aaron's special role in the Mishkan. The Gemara tells us, Rashi mentions over here, that in the previous discussion of the Torah, where the Nisim, where the princes of each of the tribes offered their particular sacrifices and their particular offers to inaugurate the Mishkan for the first 12 days, in these 12 Shvatim, these 12 tribes, Levi is not represented, and neither are the Kohanim. So the Shevet of the Kohanim, the tribe of the Kohanim, is not represented. Aaron is not represented. Rashi here says that Aaron was, he felt bad that he was not involved in this initiation of the Mishkan. So it's, that in itself is a little bit hard to understand because he was doing the work in the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, who was taking these offerings and burning them, slaughtering them, etc., whatever had to be done, was being done by Aaron and his sons. So he was processing all of these things. Nevertheless, he still felt bad that he wasn't personally making any offers. He wasn't bringing anything, neither he nor his tribe were bringing anything that would initiate and inaugurate the Mishkan. So Hashem tells him, your job is greater than their job because you are taking care of the menorah. And the menorah is a greater contribution than the offering of these sacrifices and gifts that the Nisim gave. So that statement is also difficult to understand, because to say that Aaron didn't have anything that he offered, so clearly he wants to bring something to the Beis HaMikdash. So the response of Hashem is, you will light the menorah. But lighting the menorah is not something that Aaron is offering. Lighting the menorah is something that Aaron is doing, just like he's processing all of the karbanos. It's just another service in the Beis HaMikdash. It's not that Aaron goes and takes some of his possessions and offers them to the Mishkan, which is what the Nesiim did. So in what way is Hashem making Aaron feel better by telling him he's going to light the menorah? In fact, it doesn't just say light the menorah, but also to be meitiv esaneros, which means that to clean them out and get them prepared for the next night's lighting, that he would take care of the wicks and the oil, etc., each night to prepare for the next night's lighting. So where is Aaron contributing above and beyond what he had to do anyway in the menorah that would make him feel better about the lack of contribution that the Nesiim had been doing for 12 days?
Hanukkah.
And what do you mean?
Because they were the ones who, the Chashmoneim, when they dedicated the Beis HaMikdash.
Okay, so you're suggesting that what Hashem means over here is not the daily lighting of the menorah, but the miracle that's going to come with the menorah later on in history, and that's going to be special for Aaron, as it's going to be his people, the Chashmonaim, the Kohanim, who are going to lead the Jews in that battle and in the miracle of the menorah. Okay, it's a nice answer. From here we have to assume, though, that if Hashem is telling Aaron that this is a special thing you're going to do and it's going to be greater than the Nesiim, then one has to therefore assume that had Aaron not felt like he was missing out, his feeling that he was missing out was coming from a good place. He wanted to offer something, but he couldn't. He couldn't make any offers, so he felt bad. And that was coming from a good place. And because of that, Hashem gives him the task of the menorah, which means, apparently, that had he not felt this way, had he not felt like he was missing out, the task of the menorah would not have been what it ended up being. It would have been something different. Now, we can't argue that the lighting of the menorah would have been done by a non-Kohen. That would be extremely difficult to accept, because the menorah was located in a place where a non-Kohen couldn't go. So it doesn't make sense that it would be something that had Aaron not felt bad about the Nesiim, it would have been a non-Kohen who would have lit the menorah. That does not seem to fit. It seems like it would have had to have been a Kohen. To say the menorah would not have ever been lit also doesn't seem to make sense. Obviously, a menorah is made to light. That's the whole point of it. So we're forced, therefore, to say that something about the lighting was different because of Aaron's feeling bad about the Nesiim. Meaning that because he felt that he was not able to contribute, Hashem says, I'm going to give you something that you can contribute. That you are the one who's going to light and prepare the menorah for lighting.
Maybe it goes back to what Vicky was saying. Maybe it's harder than it looks on paper. Like, when we're reading this, maybe it was more involved.
Okay, I would agree with that. So there's more effort that is needed,
right,
so than just... Okay. And based on what Mrs. Kaiser was saying, so what is more difficult about it?
Angling
them in.
Right.
So it is possible that that's the difference. You know, it's possible that had Aaron not felt bad, had Aaron not expressed a sincere wish that he could contribute, it's possible that there would not have been a commandment to angle the lights towards the middle. It could be that they just would have been lit regularly. But because Aaron felt like, I want to contribute, I want to do something too, so Hashem said, you're going to get something even greater. You're going to have to deal with the menorah. The menorah is going to be complex in its regular usage, its regular service, because you're going to have to angle those wicks, which is not so easy to do physically, but also because you'll be providing a special message on a daily basis, actually on a nightly basis. You'll be providing the message that the light doesn't come from the menorah, that the light comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That you will be providing that constant message that the menorah is not here to represent physical light, but it is to represent the study of Torah itself. And that special message comes from Aaron angling the lights towards the middle, which might have been a result of Aaron sincerely wanting to contribute. And therefore Hashem added this to the way the menorah was lit, so that would be projected. And that merit, that zechus of projecting that message, is given over to Aaron as a special zechus, a special merit to him, because he so much wanted to contribute. And perhaps that's why the Torah emphasizes, Vayas Aaron, Vayas Ken Aaron. Yes, this is what Aaron did. What did he do? He angled the lights towards the middle. That was the special thing that Hashem gave him to, so to speak, make up for the fact that he was unable to contribute the way that the other tribes did.
I've never fully understood this angling of the wicks, because even if the wick is angled, the flame is still going to go up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
On page 451, there's a picture of the menorah.
Yeah.
It's just hard to.
Yeah, and I mean, bear in mind these pictures. You have to be careful because it's only one opinion about how, you know, these pictures are not.
I thought this was the opinion we're supposed to follow.
No. The problem with pictures in anything in the Torah is that it suggests that that's the way it is, but it isn't so. There are many opinions about what things look like. Yeah. So this is certainly one of the opinions. The light would go straight up, but if the wicks are angled, then you're still going to get less area
inside of the cup.
Right, it's going to be angled towards the middle, which means the light is going to be, instead of here, it'll be here.
Yeah.
So it's going to still be. But you're right; the overall picture that you see is still lights going up in the air.
Yeah,
yeah, that is a good point.
Yeah. I want to share what I heard many years ago from our Emanuel Feldman when he spoke one time at Shabbos. He said that the avoda that Aaron did every night, he did with the same enthusiasm, same teresis, the first time he did it and the last time.
Uh-huh.
He always did it like it was the very first time that he did it. Tremendous joy and teresis.
I think that's what it means over here, that he did it. By asking Aaron that he did this.
And the other thing, I think that the reason you have the name of the Parsha Halascha, anytime you think of something up, you know, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain to get the Luchos, he had to go up the steps that elevated him spiritually to light the candles. And even when the Kohanim Duchen, they stood up above the people.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of ruchnias, the symbolism.
Yeah, so that's the last point we wanted to make over here, that the steps going up to the menorah, even if they weren't necessary, meaning even if they didn't need them, it also was symbolic. Just as the lights weren't necessary for physical light, the steps may not have been necessary, but it was also to symbolize how the lighting of the menorah is elevating everybody, that it is bringing us all up, that as it represents the study of Torah, that there is, that when one does this, when one is involved in the study of Torah, then everybody is elevated, irrespective of whether one needs those steps or not. We are all elevated through that study of Torah. And so again, the Aaron was given a task that represented something that transcended that which even the Nesim had done before. As great as what the Nesim had done up until here, but Aaron's is greater. The next part of Baloscha, we've talked about the initiation of the Mishkan and the initiation of the Kohanim. That was what we talked about with the 7 days of the Miluim and the 8th day we talked about those things, and we have the Chanukah Sabayis, we have what the Nesiim did, but what about the Leviim themselves? The Leviim are not doing service in the Mishkan, at least not in the way that the Kohanim are. What about their initiation? So that is the next discussion. The next paragraph in Baal Oscha is about the Leviim themselves being elevated or being given their special task and what they do in the Mishkan.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.